Hi, everyone. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Dean Mitchell. Please sit back and relax with your favorite listening device as you are about to enter the smartest doctor in the room. Now, the smartest doctor in the room, if he's really that smart, would acknowledge that part of his training or her training was enhanced by smart, experienced nurses, and that in any medical practice or operating room, nurses are a critical member of the team. However, it wasn't always that way. You know, back in the day, I remember, you know, when I watched movies, you know, nurses wore these like kind of white doily head coverings and the white dresses, and they were seen more as, I don't know, more like attendants than healthcare professionals. What I mean is that, you know, nurses were busy changing the patient's linens, bathing them, bringing them medicine. I mean, doing a lot of caring things. But those days seem to be long over. Just a personal story. I thought about this the other day. I had to mention this. You know, my parents tell me when I was an infant, I had a febrile seizure. And the way my father tells it, my mother kind of froze. And he grabbed me. And he ran into the street. And he hailed down a driver and said, please take me to the nearest hospital. And that happened to be St. Joseph's Hospital in Far Rockaway. I'm not even sure it's still there. And it's a Catholic hospital where the nurses were nuns. And according to my parents, especially my mom, they were incredible caretakers and literally nursed me back to health. So just a little bit of history for everybody. So, but as I mentioned, the old days are long gone. And nurses today are helping to run ICUs, you know, adjusting complicated medications. I remember even when I trained, that was the case. They are seeing their patients on their own in clinics with and without doctor supervision. So their responsibilities have increased incredibly. My guest today, Brenda Genotha, is one of those super nurses. And I know this from talking to some colleagues of mine. So she's got an amazing reputation. And now I believe she has the role of training the next generation of nurses as the dean of the Stony Brook's Nursing School. So I'm really curious to hear Brenda's take on what's happening in the role of nurses now and in the coming decades. So it's my pleasure to welcome Brenda Genotha to the podcast.
Thank you, Dr. Mitchell. Thank you very much for having me here.
Okay. So Brenda, I am sure that in your own career, I mean, getting to become dean of a nursing school, you know, they don't do that right out of school. You know, you've seen this transformation in the scope of nurses' role in healthcare. I'm just curious, what do you attribute that to? Is it more rigorous training for nurses, an increased need to fill the healthcare gap? I mean, what do you think it really did change from the nurses being at a whole different level?
I definitely believe that a lot of it has to do with education. You know, the history of nursing was that in the early ages of nursing, nurses were trained as diploma graduates. So they were taught at the bedside. Columbia University was one of the first universities to offer a bachelor's degree in nursing. Which was in the early, I want to say the early 1900s. So that started to transition nurses to be more professional.
Okay.
And then I think it's just kind of continued from there. So the basic starting nurse is an associate degree or a bachelor's degree prepared nurse. So they start out as a professional registered nurse, and from there, they can go on to continue their education in master's degree programs for advanced practice nurses. And now we offer doctorate programs like the Doctor of Nursing Practice program.
So when you started, if you can think back, I don't know how many years you've been a nurse.
I've been a nurse 26 years.
Okay. So when you think back to when you first began, did you envision that nurses would be doing what they are doing today, or does that surprise you? Or was that kind of the goal that, you know, you could see the nurses saying, look, we're going to, you know, we're going to do more than what we've done in the past?
I think it's a combination. I think that my education, I started at Molloy College, and I feel that the nuns that you mentioned earlier trained me as well. And I think they instilled in us a professional obligation to our profession. So You know, I really felt like that gave me a great foundation. I started out as an emergency room nurse at St. Francis Hospital.
Oh, wow.
And it was definitely the mentorship of the physician, my physician colleagues, that gave me the confidence to even return to school to become an advanced practice nurse and to earn my MP degree. So I think that it was also, you know, so it was the mentorship that I received, but also the need, you know, there's a big need for nurse practitioners.
Right. Again. I mean, this again, you know, as you know, and I know you work in a primary care office a little bit on the part time with one of our good friends, Dr. Neil Soskal, I'll throw his name out there, that, you know, yeah, there is seems to be this tremendous need because primary care, I mean, it's gone through these different waves, you know, where, you know, doctors, so many of them wanted to be specialists and, you know, everybody's kind of running away from primary care, which was, you know, it's a lot of the nuts and bolts of our healthcare system, but it's a lot of grinding work, doesn't necessarily pay as well as some specialties. So it does seem like the nurses start to move in to fill a void where doctors wouldn't go to certain areas to practice. And we'll get into this about how nurses are now actually, like, as you know, nurse practitioners are able to practice in New York State independently of medical doctors. Let me ask you this too about, let's talk about some current roles for nurses today, because, you know, when I think of nurses, and as I mentioned in my introduction, like, again, I'll share another funny story. You know, here, you know, you go through 4 years of medical school, you learn all these rare diseases, and you learn about heart disease and everything. And the first night I'm on call, the nurse comes to me and says, oh, you know, if your patient can't go to the bathroom, you know, and I'm like, well, I don't know. What do we do? I was 24, 5 years old. That wasn't one of my problems, you know, that I knew. So I turned to the nurse. I said, what do you think we should do? And she said, I think some milk of magnesia would really be a way to start. So, you know, again, it was that cooperation between doctors and nurses. But, you know, the sense that I always got, and I want to hear if you think this has changed a little bit, that nurses were always kind of, quote, the glue that kept the patient hospital wards from going into chaos. Because as an internal medicine resident, you know, again, back in the 80s, you know, I typically would do like a 4 or 5 week rotation on a floor, and then they would move me to somewhere else. Whereas the nurses stayed, they didn't go anywhere. Is that still the case? I mean, are nurses still sort of, you know, holding the fort on these wards and keeping the flow going and the continuity of care, especially in teaching hospitals?
Yeah.
You know, you're at Stony Brook now. Yeah.
So at Stony Brook, we have the nurses that cover units are clinical nurse specialists. So they are the glue. They provide the education, the training, preceptorship. And obviously we have residents and fellows rotating through the units. So they help to facilitate those relationships with the nursing staff as well. You know, and also managing all the other aspects and other specialties that are happening here, radiology, physical therapy, occupational therapy, all the other kind of services that are available. So that's a nurse's role, is to kind of pull everything together and keep everything, you know, with the same trajectory for the patient in mind.
You know, it's funny too, because recently I've had some family members in the hospital or even in clinics. And, you know, one of the most confusing things, I mean, even for myself as a doctor, everybody's running around in scrubs these days. You don't know who's the nurse, who's the doctor. Honestly, below that, they have a lot of new names of people in roles that I think have very limited training. I mean, they'll come in, they'll say, oh, I'm just taking vitals, but, you know, I can get you a drink, but I can't do anything else. So I think it is confusing to patients, you know, especially when everybody seems to be wearing the same garb. But I wanted to ask you too, you know, back in the day, again, you know, when you look at the movies from the 50s and 60s, and even when I trained in the early 80s, it seemed like nurses were very, or needed to be subservient to the doctor in a hospital or practice. Do you think that's changed? Do you think doctors are seeing nurses now, especially after the whole COVID crisis, where they were side by side, as respected and equals in a lot of way?
I absolutely feel that way.
I do.
I sit on a lot of committees here at SBM where, you know, our nurses are pivotal. You know, I mean, they're like you said, they're the ones at the bedside. They're the ones with the families in the room. They're the ones to see, you know, the patient during their acute phases, as well as when they're being discharged, so they can help with that transition of care. So I feel that they're very respected, and I guess I've just always been lucky that I've always worked in roles where the physician, my physician colleagues have always accepted my role and appreciated my role as a nurse. And I think that's also what's always kept me moving forward in my career, because of that confidence and, you know, feeling like a part of the team.
Yeah, I was about to say that, you know, I've said this on other podcasts, you know, what makes a good medical practice, and I'm sure even at higher levels, a good hospital, is a team. There's really no I, right? There's no I in team.
No,
the old saying. And, you know, there could be some, quote, superstar doctors, this and that too, but typically they have a great team. I mean, I'm lucky in my office, I have a great team, because I tell the patients when they, a lot of times they'll compliment my, you know, about my staff. And I said, yeah, I said, I couldn't do what I'm doing sitting here totally focused on getting you better if so many of the things were happening outside, you know, this room, in the waiting room and at the front desk, and especially even to get you into my office, you know, because again, and that's where I think sometimes there's like backlogs and problems when there's not that real cohesiveness and team approach. But I want to go back to one thing too, which, you know, one thing I was so happy to see, you know, of all the things during the COVID crisis, I was so proud when I saw, they would show this on TV, like at a certain time each day, 7 o'clock, people were outside their windows clanging, and the nurses would step out and the doctors from the hospital, and people were applauding them. And it gave me chills because, you know, it was like, yeah, these people are laying their life on the line. I mean, we do both know people who have unfortunately passed or got really sick from the initial wave of COVID. But do you feel also, is there still a problem? I remember also back in the late 80s, early 90s, there was like a nurse drain. They were willing to pay you $500 to any, you know, to any of the medical staff to find a nurse. And they were going to the Philippines and other places. Do you think some of that's changed? Has compensation improved for nurses? I mean, you know, do you think like now again, they're attracting the best and the brightest, and there's not really people fleeing nursing, they're coming back?
Absolutely. So now there's more of a faculty nursing shortage because it's also a very valued profession, right? Especially after COVID too.
Yeah.
A lot of people want to go into nursing, maybe even as a second career.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a lot of applicants, all schools, this is across the nation.
Oh, wow.
To our nursing programs. However, we have a nursing faculty shortage. So which limits the
amount. Why is that? You think people, because...
I'm not sure. I mean, a lot of our faculty recruitment efforts are lost to people working in the setting. So I think that, you know, that's a very valued piece of their profession, and part of why they may have continued their education was to provide direct patient care. You know, financially, sometimes, you know, education is not as lucrative. So that could also be a little bit of the issue with that. But definitely there's this need. So that's one of our efforts.
Are nurses, I mean, I know this may sound like a, you know, like a simplistic question, you know, that, or uneducated, you know, question. Do nurses have to pay for nursing school? Because I know back in the day, it seemed like hospitals would sometimes pay, or I guess if they're going for nurse practitioner, pay them, you know, which in medicine sounds so foreign. It seems like everybody has to pay through the teeth for any kind of schooling. But, or is it subsidized? Because again, no.
No, it could be very expensive. There's accelerated baccalaureate programs for students who already have a bachelor's degree, so they're earning a master's degree, and they're, go ahead, sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry, Brenda. You know, so my question is that I guess people can go straight into a nursing program at a college, right? But let's say they don't know. Let's say maybe they start in the sciences, and I don't know, they weren't really sure. And then they say, oh, I've gotten 3-4 years. I have a biology degree, a chemistry degree. I think I want to be a nurse. Mm-hmm. Is that another 4 years? Is it 2 years? I mean, do they get a certain amount of credits?
So if they took their basic sciences, chemistry, anatomy, and physiology, they come in, they can do accelerated baccalaureate programs. So they can get a bachelor's degree in 18 to 24 months at most universities.
Okay.
So,
and then what do they need to do? Like a year of hospital training, typically? Is that, that's like the minimum?
So at Stony Brook, what we developed with the medical center as a school of nursing is a residency program. So our new graduate RNs go into a nurse residency program for 12 months, where they actually, and it really does make their practice even more exceptional. They do evidence-based practice projects on their units together.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they participate in a lot of interprofessional educational opportunities. So we have a really nice system here. Most medical centers that are affiliated with nursing schools have something like that.
You know, I find I do teaching at the medical school. I was at Columbia for a while. Now I'm at Touro. But I also do consulting in my area of expertise in allergy around the country for practices. And typically, it's interesting, when I'm on a webinar or call, there's maybe one or two doctors, there's a few nurses, there's a few PAs. And I find that the nurses and the PAs are the most enthusiastic. they really want to learn. The doctors are like, oh, you know, I mean, I feel like they're so overwhelmed with so many things. So I do feel they're so important, you know, again, the energy that they bring. And, but I want to ask you this too. Again, we keep on talking about this crazy changing role of nurses. I mean, today there are a lot more male nurses than there ever were. I mean, obviously, again, it's like you said, it's a good job. It's a, you know, it's a safe job. I mean, you're always probably going to be able to work anywhere in the country. Mm-hmm. How do you think that's helped? I mean, obviously it's great if these male nurses can help out with some of the hard physical work, like lifting a patient and assisting in a procedure. But how do you see that all going down? Has that been a good thing for nursing, you know, that men have gotten in?
Absolutely. I think it's excellent. I think that diversity, right? You want your patients also to see something of themselves in their healthcare providers. So it's really nice to have all diverse nurses out there. So it's really important. So I think diversity as far as ethnicity and gender makes a big difference for patient outcomes.
So do you think sometimes, I don't know if this happens on a nursing ward, let's say that sometimes they may say, you know, I have this elderly female patient, I think we're going to put a female nurse there. Or I have this elderly male patient or young male patient, we're going to put a guy there. Is that sometimes come into play when you're trying to mix and match what's going to be the best fit?
Absolutely. And I think the newer wave of the way that the floors are working is they have these healthcare teams.
Okay.
So sometimes maybe they'll put, and I know you mentioned that there's other members of the team. And so there's comfort care providers and LPNs on some units and nursing assistants and all of these phlebotomists and all of the other roles. And sometimes, you know, just by diversifying that workforce and bringing that into the room makes the patient maybe feel a little bit more comfortable because, you know, you kind of see someone in yourself or somebody develops a different level of empathy with you. And that just helps with the caring process too.
Okay. I don't know in Stony Brook, unless it's across the board. I remember when I worked in hospitals in New York, there was a union. I think it was 1199. Is that the nurses unionized out on Long Island as well?
Yeah.
And I asked one of the doctors about this. Well, actually, he was a cardiothoracic surgeon at Columbia. And I teased him. I said to him, you know, do you think residents and maybe even doctors should unionize, you know, because there's probably some advantages to that. I mean, we're really being squashed by insurance companies and everywhere you look, you know, they divide and conquer. Do you think the nurses union has been effective in protecting nurses? I know, nurse, you know, it's interesting. I think sometimes, you know, the public doesn't really fully realize they'll see it like a nurses will go out on strike, you know, rarely, but they're doing it most of the time, not just about pay, but, you know, and that they should be paid more, but that they're always, sometimes the hospitals are pushing them, you know, to take care of too many patients at once. Mm-hmm. So do you feel the union overall is a very important thing?
I think so. That's the patient ratio. How many nurses should be assigned to how many patients in different settings, you know, acute settings like ICUs and CCUs versus units like floors where the patients are a little bit more stable. Mm-hmm. That's been a big contender for the union to fight for the rights of nurses on. So I think in that aspect, it can be very helpful. I mean, you know, like any other political environment, sometimes it can be limiting as well. But yeah, I think it definitely is helpful. And like you said, the salaries are very, very good nowadays. I think they're across at least this area, you know, Long Island and New York, pretty fair. I think they're equitable. I think most of the hospital systems are kind of matching So that provides opportunities for our nurses.
Do you think the union is helpful? See, this is one of my criticisms always about the medical, the doctors, you know, because they've also, in my, you know, I feel some of my colleagues feel the same way, that it's very easy to be a target. You know, something goes wrong in the hospital, and of course, it's the doctor's fault. It's the nurse's fault. You know, not that the person could be very sick, and it's a very tough case, and, you know, things don't always work out. And I always felt that unions tend to protect their members, you know. So just out of curiosity, if a nurse, it was an error or some kind of, you know, hospital put pressure, we want to fire this nurse, does the union get involved to say, wait, we want to look, we're going to represent her, and we want to make sure that this wasn't just, you know, things out of this person's control? Does that happen? Is that?
Yeah, so I think that the union obviously sets forth rules and regulations. Mm-hmm. And, you know, provides a process for that. So if there was, you know, obviously if there was some kind of negligence on the nurse's part, I would think that that would be documented properly. And, you know, the union would stand by the documentation of that. But I do think that it gives the nurse a little bit extra, you know, protection against maybe unwarranted.
Yeah, no, I mean, unfortunately, this, you know, a lot of things get very political, heated, depending if it's a high profile case, you know, somebody's got to take the fall. And it's usually the person that doesn't have the, you know, a membership or something behind them. Just out of curiosity too, with nurses, are they licensed in a particular state, or can they go from state to state? You know, if somebody was like a nurse in New York and then they said, oh, you know, I'm going to move to California, do they have, you know, it's very complicated for a doctor to some degree. Is it a little bit easier for a nurse, or it's not an issue?
So for registered nurses, you're registered in New York State. There's reciprocity in a lot of states. So
oh, yeah.
It changes all the time, but like Connecticut, New Jersey, those states would, you'd have to apply, but they would accept.
Essentially, it's a fee. It's not like you have to do any retraining or take a special exam or anything like that.
Exactly.
But there are some states that you would have to take like an exam or.
I'm pretty sure from the last time I checked, New York State, we would not have to. We would just have to apply.
Okay.
But some states coming into New York, we have very strict guidelines in New York State. So those outside of New York, trying to get a New York State RN license, would have to maybe sit for an exam.
Do you think also too, it's interesting, you know, I mean, doctors did this and then for a while, you know, I'm curious because now that nurses are getting more independence and able to work in practices and see patients on their own, are more and more of them, you think, leaving the hospital venue? I mean, they, you know, with all the, you know, you're seeing the sickest patients, there's obviously, you know, you're under a lot of things, bureaucracy out of your control. Do you find more and more nurses or experienced nurses are leaving the hospital to go into specialty kind of practices or primary care and not staying in the hospital?
As registered nurses or as advanced practice, like NP?
Well, let's just say even the registered nurses, because, you know, they're, you know, because they are essentially, they can't practice on their own. We know that.
Right.
So do you find them staying in the hospital? Is it a better situation for them? Or are they like fleeing, saying, you know, okay, I've had enough of this, you know, long hours, really sick patients, you know, I mean, and I'm going to move on.
Yeah, there was a big exodus, I guess, of nurses after COVID. We see that they are starting to come back. You know, some of the hospitals, because these nurses haven't been practicing for a few years, are even offering like refresher courses, even though they work as registered nurses for a long period of time. I don't see a lot of hospital systems or private offices using registered nurses, at least in this area.
Right. It's changed. As you know, too, they're using. Let me ask you this. Oh, this is a great question in my mind. What would you, we'll try to be very diplomatic about this. What do you think the difference between a nurse practitioner and a physician assistant? How do you see, I know there's probably some licensing things that are allowed to, even though to me it gets very blurry.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, to me it seems like the nurses have more training. Some of the PAs are very good and they go into these specialty practices. And I know some of them work in ORs, you know, doing stuff. So I don't know. So what, like, let's say if you had a friend or a relative and said, Brenda, I'm thinking of going to medicine. I'm not interested in becoming a doctor. You know, it's too costly, too many years. You know, I want to be with my family. Should I become a nurse practitioner, or should I become a physician assistant? What would you tell them, the pros and the cons?
Okay, so a nurse practitioner is a advanced certificate at a master's or doctorate level that goes on your registered nurse license. So that means you need to have a bachelor's in nursing, earn your registered nursing license, and then continue your education to become an NP. So I know you mentioned earlier how physicians, 4 years of medical school and all of the training that you do, most nurse practitioners have several years of nursing experience. So not that it's the same training, but that they have this at the bedside.
Oh, I'm sorry. So you're saying also like when they're in nursing school, even let's say it's an undergraduate program, they're already getting hospital experience early on?
Yes. You have
interesting.
Clinicals usually your first semester, and you do it throughout the 4 year bachelor's program.
Wow. Okay.
And they rotate through populations. Usually most schools work, you do OB, pediatric.
Oh, wow.
Med surg.
So by the time you're done with the 4 years, you're like kind of ready to roll, you know, whereas medical school, you're ready to do nothing.
Yes,
exactly. That's a big secret that people don't realize. It's like you start residency and like, you're like, oh my God. No, I know people that flipped out, you know, we our third and fourth year, we get experience to the hospitals, but it's not until you start internship that it gets real. Because I guess when they give you a paycheck, even though it's a very small one, they expect you to work all night long and very hard. So, okay.
So a nurse, right, would even have psych mental health experience. We offer electives even in the OR.
So what would you say, though, if let's say the person you were talking to said, well, I don't want to work that hard. Would you say you go the PA way? What does the PA have to do, about 2 years or maybe more? I don't want to minimize it.
No. The PA program here at Stony Brook is a 5-year program.
Five years.
But it's a bachelor's to through.
Okay, so, right. Okay, so everybody has to have that bachelor's before they...
Right.
Okay.
So being a nurse practitioner would be a four-year bachelor's as a registered nurse. And then you would go on to get a certificate as the master's level nurse practitioner or a doctorate as a nurse practitioner.
Well, like I mentioned earlier in the thing too, it's interesting. Like again, when my training, I remember some of these nurses were amazing, you know, who were running ICUs essentially. I mean, they were there all the time. I mean, they were like kind of, I'd be in there as the intern or resident and they'd say, no, you want to give this guy a little more dopamine, you know, or something. So PAs can't do that. I mean, they're not going to put them in that type of, they could, really?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So a PA, it's just a little bit different of a training. You mentioned earlier that nurse practitioners in New York State can practice independently. That is true after 3,600 hours of practice with a collaborative agreement with a physician. So that's about 2 years full time that a nurse practitioner would work with a physician under a collaborative agreement. Then they can go on to practice independently in New York State. Whereas the PA, a physician's assistant, is working under the physician's licensing. So the physician's assistant will always be attached to that.
Right. Yeah. So does that essentially mean that they have to really run the cases by the doctor, or they just through the doctor? I mean, that's at the doctor's discretion in the practice.
I would say that's probably at the discretion. Yeah. I mean, nurse practitioners, we, you know, collaborate. So as long as you continue to collaborate, which I think most people on a healthcare team are collaborating anyway, that meets the essentials for our practice in New York State. But because the physician's assistant is working with the physician, I'm not 100% sure how often they have to have charts signed off.
Interesting. Okay. All right. Now I'm going to ask you about in your administrative role as dean of the nursing school.
I'm an associate dean.
Associate dean. Well, let's not play down. Okay, yeah. You're associate dean. We're going to make you the dean pretty soon. Okay. Sorry. What are you looking for when you're looking at nursing candidates? You know, I'm sure medical schools and all the different people who interview have their thing. Obviously, they keep on kind of sugarcoating. Like I said, we want people with really good grades, but, you know, we want to make sure that they have the right personality, the right drive, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, it's interesting because, as you and I probably both know, there are people that can be very book smart. Let's use that old fashioned term, but it's true. They're really smart. They do great on exams. But then they're not really great working with people, or it's just not right for them. It's not the right fit. Mm-hmm. And then there are other people who are pretty good students, but they, you know, have a super drive to accomplish this and, you know, get through all the courses and stuff like that. So I don't know, I guess when you're screening through candidates for the nursing school, where you did at Columbia, now you're doing at Stony Brook, what are you looking for?
So undergraduate is different. So undergraduate really is grades, right?
Right, these kids are sciences, so young.
Yeah. They don't really, I don't think many students who are undergraduates, not all, but many aren't really, don't have a career goal trajectory mm-hmm. at this point. So, you know, science, GPAs, I always read essays, you know, that
you do, right? Yeah.
And what, you know, why do they want to be a nurse? You know, those mm-hmm. are very interesting and revealing to read. But for graduate, it is very different. We really do look at their experience, mm-hmm. You know, where have they worked? How has that impacted them as a nurse? I think that's so important. You know, we really want to see that they have that empathy. To be healthcare providers, you know, recommendations are important, diversity, you know, these are the kinds of things that we're looking for our graduate, for our MP program.
All right, now I'm going to ask you some personal advice here, so we get very personal on the program. Okay. You know, over the years, actually, I've had one nurse with me 30 years, and I have another one now who I just hired this past year, you know, who's been fantastic. But when I go on Indeed to hire nurses, you know, I get a slew of resumes. I hate this part of the job. And I'm looking through and I'm trying to see who would be qualified for my practice. We do a lot of IV vitamin therapy in the practice, and we do injections and draw blood. And, you know, that's, you know, again, and of course, the nurses are an integral part of, like, you know, confirming what I'm telling the patient, because sometimes, as you know, after they walk out of the doctor's office, they don't remember anything that the doctor said. And I find it challenging. I typically, I guess probably like in medicine, I like to see where somebody's trained. Mm-hmm. Again, in my practice too, unfortunately, I'm probably not going to normally take somebody who's right out of school, even though they can be good. It's just that there's a little bit of a learning curve. And sometimes in private practice, patients aren't as patient. You know, they want experienced people. So what would you say if you were asked by one of your doctor colleagues, you know, Brenda, we need your help. We got to hire another nurse now for this dermatology, urology practice. What are you looking at when you look at a resume?
So I actually developed a fellowship program for nurse practitioners here at Stony Brook because I feel that there is a need even for newer NPs to be trained specifically in certain areas. Mm. I definitely, if it was a dermatology office, I would look for what kind of experience they might have had in dermatology, mm-hmm. whether it's formal, like through an educational programming, or if they have continuing education credits in that area, or if they've worked there, you know, as mm-hmm. a registered nurse or as a nurse practitioner before. So on-the-job experience too. But I definitely think that, you know, that type of formal or informal experience in that area should be really critical to mm-hmm. choosing where, you know, who you're hiring. Primary care, the same thing. You know, I mean, everyone needs some place to get experience, but there are other avenues that you can explore. Mm-hmm. Where they did their clinicals. You know, clinical
Does the school ever give them, I know this sounds almost silly, but does the school ever give them like a rating or something when they graduate or leave, you know, honors, yeah. you know, got by, just got by.
We do have very high standards. You know? We have very high standards. They must earn okay. a B or better. We have actually recently switched to competency-based education, which is much yeah. more medical education.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we've moved away from grade-based.
Yeah, because the grades don't, I mean, it's great if somebody has nice grades. It's that's wonderful. But, you know, like we talked before, you know, being a nurse, being a doctor, you know, in the war zone, it's mm-hmm. not about your grades. I always tell the story, like, you know, when I was in, it was kind of funny, when I was in residency in New York City, and there's about 30 of us, and two of the residents were very, you know, had come from a top medical school. They were, when we used to sit down to take an exam, they got the highest grades. But I will tell you, they were the two worst to be on call with at night. They could not make a decision. You know, they were like, it was like they were flipping through the book. Oh, it could be this, could be that. I'm like, I knew, we got to make a decision here. Do we give them antibiotics or do we anticoagulate? I mean, something has to be done. And that, you know, and nursing and medicine is very much a decision-making, you know, type of job. You know, so you could be the smartest book guy in the world, but that's not going to help when you got to make a key decision.
Yeah. All right.
As we kind of wind down, I don't know. What do you see for the future for nursing? What would you or you like to see, you know, the nurses being, you know, in the future? And, you know, and one of the things I just want to throw in, you know, as you probably know, too, Brenda, so many patients complain today. They're so worried that, you know, medical care seems to be more and more impersonal. Mm-hmm. And, you know, with AI coming, I don't know if it's only going to get worse. You'll be seeing your chatbot and your chatbot will be answering your questions in the future. But what do you see the nurses, you know, possibly as you're training them for the future to provide?
Yeah, so it's so funny that you said that. So I even was going to bring that up. So I just spoke last weekend at the National Organization for Nurse Practitioner Faculty, and I spoke about using AI for training our students, because I think it is such a wonderful tool and it's going to change the landscape. How you just said, we used to flip through textbooks. I used to flip through textbooks. Our students have it on their cell phone now, you know, a plethora of information and diagnostic tools and algorithms that they can use right at their fingertips. So we do have to change how we educate our students. I think that's so important because it's really not about, you know, it's about clinical decision making and, you know, not how much information is available to them. It's how to use that information. So I think that's really important. What I would love to see in the future is, you know, nurse leaders. I think that, you know, being part of the team, being continued to be recognized. I think that there has been a change in the landscape. I see it as everybody has a role. You know, not really hierarchical, but
a team of equals for sure. Mm-hmm. You know, so anyway, this was terrific. This is everything I wanted to know about nurses and what's going on with them. And I think the public should know. And I think my listeners appreciate that because, you know, in so many ways, the medical profession has been, denigrated. I mean, and I think COVID brought back a little bit of that respect. And of course, we have to earn it every day. You know, I do like, I think it's Jeff Bezos. He goes, you know, his saying at Amazon is that every day is day one. And that's kind of a little bit how I feel when I go to my practice every day. Every day I gotta be on to provide my patients who are expecting the best possible care. And I know with your reputation, that's what you do every day. And that's what you're helping the next generation of nurses. So thank you so much for coming on. Anything else you want to let my listeners know or send them to follow anything that's going on?
I really appreciate this opportunity. It's wonderful. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.